Everybody ready?
They were desperate, going for desperate for people. They said, okay, take this guy too. He thinks he can go to college.
We're going to try this again. Thank you. All right.
Okay, boy.
The House Committee on Veterans and Preparedness is now in session, February 6, 2018. Thank you all for coming, and thanks all who are tuning in from TV land. We are going to open a hearing, and we're going to open an organizational meeting so that we can actually talk about the rules. Mr. Cione.
All right. So the committee rules reflect the model rules. I will draw your attention to item number 4, which is carryover items. In the event that committees do not complete the scheduled agenda, items can be carried over. These rules are posted on OLIS, and please let me know if you have any questions about them.
Okay. Other than that, they're basically the same rules we've been using for some time. Are there any objections to accepting the rules as our rules? Seeing no objections, the rules are established. We're going to close the organizational meeting. Right?
Yeah.
We're also going to now open a public hearing. Before we get to the actual legislation, we're going to do invitations or introductions. We're going to go from my far right. Please say where you're from, what district. Representative Post.
Representative Post, or Bill Post, House District 25, Kaiser, St. Paul, Newburgh.
What he wants to say is he's Representative John Lively.
Thank you, from District 12, which is Springfield.
There
you
go.
I'm Representative Deborah Boone, and I represent the beautiful upper left coast of Oregon, which is Clatsop County, half of Tillamook, part of Western Washington County, where I have banks, not Forest Grove, and out to Gaston.
Oh, my name is Cione Filimoy-Hollett, and I am the committee staff working with the House Vets Committee.
And I'm Representative Evans, the chair.
Representative Esquivel, Medford, District 6.
Mark Meek, House District 40, Oregon City, Gladstone, Jennings Lodge, Johnson City.
And the committee staff?
Corey Rosenberg, committee staff.
All right, so everybody, we're us, everybody, the same.
Who are you?
This is us.
All right, we're going to start with House Bill 4040, Scholarships. And Sue's going to read a summary of the bill, and then we will actually invite our... I did open up a public hearing when I first did an introduction, but we're going to reopen the public hearing.
Okay. House Bill 4040 will provide a scholarship for establishes the Oregon Military Families and Education Workforce Preparedness Scholarship within Oregon Military Department. And House Bill 4040 provides the scholarship for Oregon veterans and for National Guard members and their family members.
So for the committees, this is a committee bill. We talked about this a little bit before. And again, before we invite our speakers up that are going to be speaking, I believe, in support of it, I want to be very clear. This particular bill is very tightly written. It does two things. It creates the scholarship program that would be eligible under lottery ballot measure $96, and it adjusts the definition of veteran to include those who are actively serving in the National Guard and have completed basic military training for scholarship purposes only. I want to emphasize this. This is not open the door to anything but the scholarship purposes only, but it is an answer to what is increasingly becoming Department of Defense innovation and creativity, deploying our National Guard folks under different statuses. This has happened across the United States. And the situation is when they're deployed under different title statuses, they're not always eligible for the GI Bill. So we're trying to help combat that. We're trying to give another tool to keep our National Guard healthy and to take care of the folks that we depend upon for floods, fires, and everything in between. So that's why this particular bill came to our committee. There's a similar bill in Higher Education Coordinating Commission that is a much larger, more robust approach. This has been very tightly written to ensure that it is eligible for ballot measure $96. And I'd like to invite up Adjutant General, Major General Michael Stencil of the Oregon Military Department. And if Kelly Lunsford would like to come up and sit next to him, come on up, guys. General, the floor is yours for more than 2 minutes.
Thank you.
If I had to, I can cram it.
Sir, we have time. If you could move the mic to you and say who you are and what you do, that'd be great. Thanks.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Evans and members of the committee. I'm Major General Mike Stenzel, the Adjutant General for the State of Oregon. I'm here to speak in support of state tuition assistance for the members of the Oregon National Guard. The means or method for how the state tuition assistance is accomplished and financed is not something I'm in a position to comment on. However, I believe state tuition assistance is a vital and necessary tool to help attract young women and men into Oregon's National Guard and to help accomplish what is asked of us, both at home and abroad. In my limited time, I hope to paint a picture of the Oregon National Guard's value to the state, our current struggle to maintain end strength, and the support that tuition assistance can provide to us. So this graphic is all about who we are and what we want to do. As shown by this logo, the Oregon National Guard provides value to the state and nation through three primary missions: building partnerships, fighting America's wars, and the home front. While we had more than 375 soldiers and airmen deploy overseas last year supporting national objectives, the governor is able to use the manpower and equipment provided for our federal missions for state domestic support as well. My focus today is on support for the state of Oregon, but I want to point out that it is the manpower and equipment required for our federal missions that provides for the dual state domestic capability. Without the federal mission requirement, there will be no equipment, there will be no manpower within the state to support a domestic requirement. In the same way that Texas, Florida, and Puerto Rico use their National Guard in response to devastating hurricanes, Oregon service members with skills in search and recovery, excavation, medical assistance, and dozens of other specialties will be part of the initial response and will coordinate the arrival and distribution of federal assets during a major disaster in Oregon. But this support is not just for major disasters. This last year alone, we had 150 members and four helicopters available for emergency response during the eclipse. We had 12 members providing ambulatory support during the winter snowstorms. We had more than 1,100 members on state active duty fighting forest fires and hurricane recovery efforts across the entire United States. We supported 20 search and recoveries. Our explosive ordnance disposal teams responded to more than 26 incidents. We provided counter-drug support in communities across the state, and our civil support team was available 24/7 with hazmat detection and identification capabilities. Since I know you'll be looking at tuition assistance in the context of our current budget challenges, I think it's important to note that the National Guard's direct economic impact to the state is substantial. Overall, our operations have strengthened Oregon's economy by creating employment and business opportunities and providing services for the residents of Oregon when they need it most. As highlighted on this spreadsheet, in FY17, Oregon National Guard payroll and non-payroll expenditures created direct employment income and direct and indirect business income for local vendors of $388 million. But for a $27 million investment, Oregon receives more than $360 million in federal economic benefits. This slide gets to the heart of my support for state tuition assistance. Ed strength is my biggest readiness priority. Our organization's strength has been in decline for some time due to a number of factors: high operational tempo and time commitment, a thriving economy, and large active duty recruiting incentives have all played a part. Increased training requirements due to the growing complexity of technology and the reduction of our active component have blown the old participation model of 2 weeks per year and 1 week in a month right out of the water. When you easily add 2 weeks to this commitment, 4 to 5 weeks of training on top of 1 week in a month, it's not that uncommon. When I first got in and was flying F-4s back in the mid-80s, I could come in, brief, go fly a sortie, and debrief in under 4 hours. After we committed to the F-15s in 89, with the increased avionics capability and the technology that comes with our weapons and how we employ the aircraft, to come in and brief, fly, and debrief, it's impossible to do it under 6 hours. It typically requires a full day now, something that you used to be able to do in just 4 hours. You contrast that as well with the deployments back in that time frame. We would deploy maybe a couple weeks every other summer if you wanted to. Now the standard is pretty much you're going to deploy every year for at least 4 to 6 weeks, and it's an expectation. We're putting everything on the table to turn this around. Retention teams, open houses, increased marketing, and leadership changes are just some of the steps that we have taken. But this problem is broader than front-end recruiting. Our culture and command climate also play a part in our retention and preventing losses at the back end, and I'm very conscious of that and our responsibility to fix it. So why did I begin my remarks today summarizing our operational and economic importance to the state of Oregon? The reality is that I have units at risk of leaving this state. Unless we turn our strength around, the capabilities and the economic benefits I previously described are at risk of being lost. If we lose federally recognized units, we lose not only the domestic capability, but also the federal money associated with these missions. And I believe tuition assistance can have a significant impact on our ability to recruit and retain service members and retain these units. Across the nation, tuition assistance has been shown to be the largest reason our members join the National Guard, with 61% of enlistees indicating it as the top factor behind their decision. This is what our young people are looking for, and this is where I need your help. Not only will it help my Manning, but it will improve our culture as well. Our culture is built on the idea that every soldier and airman is a leader, and leaders are learners. I need to create a learning environment that goes beyond job skills and knowledge, one that leads to a culture of curiosity and innovation. I need them to think more broadly and lead more fulfilling lives so they can stay in for a full career. In an ideal world, I too will have a team with degrees in political science, arts, psychology, business, communications, law enforcement, all working together to tackle our most challenging problems, as all of you are here today. The Department of Defense currently has 3 education programs in place: the Montgomery GI Bill, Federal Tuition Assistance, or FTA, and the post 9/11 GI Bill, but they all fall short in enticing recruitment and retention for the National Guard. The Montgomery GI Bill and FTA are not robust enough, and the large delay between enlistment and the ability to use them does not make them attractive incentives. By comparison, the post 9/11 benefits can be substantial, but they aren't earned until a member has deployed for at least 90 days. Other states across the nation have recognized the need to provide tuition assistance to be competitive in recruitment as well. Of the 54 states and territories, only Oregon and Guam are not currently offering some form of tuition assistance. I need your help in turning Oregon into a green state. The bottom line is that we are fighting to enlist and retain Guard women and men in a highly competitive environment. I have states actively pushing behind the scenes for some of the units that we aren't fully manning. I'm pursuing a cyber unit for the state, but it most likely won't be placed here over concerns that we can't fill it, even though we all know this is a technology hub. I am in support of a state tuition assistance program for our National Guard. Our total strength is a critical part of our readiness. I believe state tuition assistance is a vital and necessary tool to help attract and retain young women and men into service for our state, and I am asking for your help in making it happen. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you, General.
Go ahead, and we'll have questions for the panel after. Go ahead.
Chair Evans and members of the committee, I am Kelsey Ludford, Vice President of the Enlisted Association of the National Guard of Oregon. Our association supports causes that directly affect the 6,800 Army and Air National Guard enlisted members in our great state of Oregon, against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and helps our state recover after natural disasters. Our members volunteered for the National Guard, not for the pay, but out of a desire to serve our fellow Oregonians. 1,000 of Oregon's soldiers and airmen willingly volunteered their summer to fight fires throughout our state. They did it to take care of their fellow Oregonians. Now it is time to take care of our Guard members. When it comes to educational benefits for veterans and service members, it's sad to say that Oregon is tied for last place. As the General said, out of 54 states and districts, we're tied with Guam. And the tie is that we have absolutely no education benefits. state education benefits. The passage of this bill is the highest priority of the Enlisted Association of the National Guard of Oregon. Thank you for your time.
Thank you both. Any questions for the panel? All right. Well, thank you very much, General. I know you have a busy schedule. Thank you, Kelsey. It's always good to see you.
Yes, well, sir.
We will invite up the next speaker on the list.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. And that will be Marshall. Marshall, come on up. Say your name and where you're from, please, and tell us what you're thinking.
Hello, I'm Marshall, or Marty Wilde. I'm from Lane County, and I know some of you already. Chair Evans, Vice Chairs Boone and Esquivel, and distinguished members of the committee, I'm a 23-year veteran of the military, active in reserve, including deployments to Bosnia, the Persian Gulf, and Afghanistan. I currently serve as a colonel in the Oregon Air National Guard as a judge advocate. I'm pleased today not to disagree with my boss. My test today is in my personal capacity and not on behalf of the Oregon Military Department or the Air Force. I testify today in support of House Bill 4040. One of my important jobs, and really the job of any leader in the military, is providing advice regarding benefits and connecting service members to opportunities to further their education. We are blessed with a variety of benefits, but assistance with college financing is a patchwork of various programs. As you heard, service members who are on active duty now have access to the post-9/11 GI Bill, but those who have not served on active duty or have only served on active duty for training have much more limited benefits. For instance, when I started my career in the Army National Guard, I received only Chapter 1606 benefits, which are around $200 a month at the time. These benefits have increased a bit, but still cap out at $375 per month. When added to drill pay, those benefits are a start, but not enough to go to school and pay living expenses. Other scholarships do exist, of course, but many have definitions of the term veteran that preclude many in our enlisted force from applying. Without better funding, student loans can prevent veterans from seeking opportunities for further service after graduation. House Bill 4040 provides a modest fund to help veterans get that last mile or last dollar of funding. By providing a volunteer oversight board, the bill allows discretion to use the funds in the manner most likely to promote student success. The bill also takes steps to ensure that the costs of administration are modest and do not eclipse the value to veterans. In short, House Bill 4040 is an important step in developing our enlisted force and ensuring that our veterans can complete a college education. I hope that you will pass the bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the speaker? All right, thank you very much. Anybody not have a chance to sign up but want to? Seeing nobody rushing up, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4040. To the committee, it is my intention to work 4040 next Tuesday, unless we have any major challenges, complications, or concerns. The paperwork should be ready by then. Just a heads up. Okay. All right. We're going to now open a public hearing on, we're going to actually go at ease. We're going to be at ease for the next few minutes. We are no longer at ease. We're going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 4038, and we're going to invite Oregon State Treasurer Mr. Tobias Reed. Please come forward and appreciate your comments. Thanks for making time today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Sorry I'm late. Committee members, thank you for having me. I'm Tobias Reed, the honor of serving as State Treasurer. And I just have a comment on one particular aspect of House Bill 4038. Would not presume to be sufficiently expert to comment on the other pieces, but Section 2 has particular resonance for me after my first year as State Treasurer. As many of you know, in a lot of other states, the state treasurer is responsible for unclaimed property. But in Oregon, that responsibility falls to the state land board, of which I'm a member with the governor and the secretary of state. So as we got started a year ago, we started inquiring a little bit about the unclaimed property that was in the possession of the department, and discovered a bronze star. And with a little bit of work, we were able to identify and locate the daughter and grandkids of the World War II veteran soldiers who had earned that bronze star. So one of the highlights for me of the first year was being able to travel to the Umatilla Reservation and take part in a tribal ceremony in which we were able to return that bronze star to the to Private Nanigas's daughter and grandkids. The Bronze Star, fortunately, was never in jeopardy of being auctioned off, but there are other military commendations and medals that are part of the unclaimed property division at the Department of State Lands, and we would like to make sure that those commendations are not auctioned off by the state so that we have additional opportunity to reunite them with their owners or their families. And, Mr. Chair, committee members, it's essentially as simple as that. There are a lot of other good things about the bill, but I hope we can pass that section and give us more time to get those commendations and awards and back to where they belong. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Treasurer. For just the committee's background and context, again, this is the omnibus bill 4038. It is bits and pieces of all a lot of different things that we need to get accomplished. I'm going to ask Sione to kind of read the rest of the bill, and that I'll give you a couple extra minutes to see if you have any questions for the treasurer before he moves on. Go ahead and explain what the other parts of the bill are, please.
All right. House Bill 4038, as the chair indicated, is the omnibus bill. We've already heard about the military medals piece of this bill. Under this, the Department of State Lands would not be authorized to sell or destroy military medals. The bill also would also respond to the Task Force on Incarcerated Veterans and provide two positions within ODVA, specifically for incarcerated veterans. The bill would also direct ODVA, the Department of Veterans Affairs, to study the efficacy of siting the next Oregon Veterans Home in Roseburg. And the bill would also direct the Department of Veterans Affairs to study potential sites for state veterans cemeteries in collaboration with tribal governments.
And the committee members, there's an amendment that is in draft, should be here by next week, by Tuesday, that would also provide for the ability for a grant program for pro bono legal work, which is something that the Military Officers Association of America is pushing as a national priority. Oregon's one of the few states that does not actually have that for veterans navigating the court process. It is permissive in its approach, but it's something that would add to the omnibus nature of the bill. So that's what we're looking at. Mr. Treasurer, certainly appreciate your comments. Are there any questions for, just to clarify what we're trying to do here is currently under current law, if you find a medal in the unclaimed property batch, we would technically supposedly have to auction it.
Mr. Chair, it's as I understand it, it's quite discretionary. The Bronze Star, I think, was sufficiently unusual that was not likely to be auctioned off, but there are a whole other category of things that might be. And
campaign ribbons,
right,
things like that.
And certainly you and others on the committee know better than I. I'm told it's possible to replace similar things in commissaries, but that's not the one that your grandfather or your relative had on their chest or their arm.
Right.
And that's a piece of what was really clear when we were in Pendleton and able to hand the Bronze Star, not any Bronze Star, but the Bronze Star that their ancestor had earned. That's what we want to make sure is possible.
Thank you for bringing forward this idea.
Thank you.
Yes.
On the recipient list of where the and thank you for bringing this forward. On the recipient list of where these can go besides, you know, the auction block, thoughts about the Oregon Military Museum?
Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish, the idea is that we would want to make use of allied, similarly intended organizations. I think the American Legion, the Veterans of Foreign Wars, these kinds of things were in our heads. I don't think the Military Museum would be inconsistent with that. We certainly would be interested in having those organizations able to display and extend the reach. And certainly, if that happened, we'd want to keep careful tabs of where they went, and the records remain with the Department of State Lands. So if someone says, hey, that's the one that my ancestor had, we'd know where it went and be able to reunite. So extending that reach is certainly consistent with the intent.
The follow-up comment, I guess, is that I'd love to see them added to the list just because they have the capability to catalog and do all of those things that maybe a service organization sometimes might not, since that's more of an all-volunteer basis. There's a little more foundation around the museum and being able to log and keep those records above and beyond display, that might be something we consider adding before this bill passes.
So for timing purposes, Do you need that in amendment, or can he put that as a policy?
It just, it's not one of the listed, it's, yeah, just, there's nothing that would allow for that in this, the way it's drafted.
Would it allow for that, and would, could we get go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Parrish, I was just looking at it, trying to determine, and I'm not enough sufficiently familiar with 501c19 to determine whether the Military Museum would count there, but we are absolutely happy to look into the best way to make that happen.
Yeah, I don't think they are C-19, as a museum, but.
So.
We'll look into that for sure, Mr. Chair and Representative Parrish.
All right. So how about this? If we can get an amendment by next week so we make sure we can move it, mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
And if not, then we'll ask the Senate consider it on the other side.
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. I just think, logging it, safekeeping, sometimes we've been involved in some of those groups, and they change hands, and things wind up in people's basements.
I think that that's clearly in line with it.
That's ODBA.
ODBA is going to come up next. We can ask. But I think that they're one listed as one of the organizations that can assist with that as well. So, thank you very much. Any other questions for the Treasurer? Thank you very
thank
much.
You, Chair, committee members.
We will try to get this moving so you don't have to, you know, send them to an auction block.
Thank you.
Mr. Sparks.
That's Chief Sparks.
Yes, it is. It's also Acting Director Sparks. Mr. Acting Director, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Evans, members of the committee. My name is Mitch Sparks, and as of last night, I am the Acting Director of the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. I look forward to working with all of you during the legislative season, and I invite you to contact me directly on any veterans issues. I'd like to break down 4038 in each section and start with the Roseburg home. The first issue on the bill is a report from ODVA on the progress of the Roseburg Veterans Home. We are actively working on studying the progress of the home. We are reviewing the history, the statutory requirements, and the federal requirements for obtaining federal funds to build the home. We are studying various models of care in order to address the needs of our aging veterans in the Roseburg area that includes skilled nursing, assisted living, memory care, domiciliaries, and community-based care, which includes in-home and adult or foster daycare. We're also looking at all the funding options for the construction and operational cost, including federal VA match dollars and state matching funds, federal per diem, private pay, and Medicaid pay. We are examining the staffing challenges for the various models in this particular rural setting. We are monitoring the potential for a shift in federal VA policy on long-term care delivery and any potential for funding models of care that are options to skilled nursing care. The topic of veterans homes will be part of the State Veterans Directors Conference in Washington, D.C. at the end of February that we will attend. So we're hoping to gain some insight from that. This bill also addresses military medals held by the Department of State Lands. The Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs is happy to provide any technical help on military medals and provide any assistance on the identification and delivery of those medals to next of kin. That would be our pleasure to assist in that. The third component of the bill asks the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to study potential sites on state and tribal lands for veteran cemeteries. We understand that our national cemeteries in Oregon are running out of space. We are beginning to look how other states have located property, funded, and built their own state-owned veteran cemeteries. The federal VA provides grant funds for states for this purpose under the VA Cemetery Grants Program. And at the State Veterans Conference, this will also be a topic which I will be able to glean quite a bit of knowledge from, too. And the last one is the Reentry Benefits Program, Incarcerated Vet Program. And I'd like to call up Cindy Booth from the Department of Corrections.
Please.
Come on up and join me. And before we start with this, I'd like to comment on the outstanding partnership we have with Department of Corrections on this. This program would not be possible without this high-level partnership, and I'd like to hold that out as an example for state agencies to working together. It's been a great partnership for us. Based on recommendations from the 2016 Incarcerated Task Force, we have worked in close partnership with the Department of Corrections to develop a sustainable and effective program. One of our veteran service officers is heading up the work at Coffee Creek to identify and meet with all veterans entering state corrections custody. First and foremost, he works to ID all who self-identify as veterans, make sure that any current VA benefits are turned off to avoid any overpayment status. He works with DOC to determine specialized needs while incarcerated, including placement. Discuss possible VA educational benefits while incarcerated. He's also meeting with veterans at DOC facilities statewide, benefits, claims, and very importantly, to discuss potential upgrades to discharge for veterans who have discharge other than honorable. And you know, our key responsibility is to make sure that veterans' benefits are reinstated shortly after release for that part of the program. This ask is for two veteran service officers to carry out a robust release and entry program for incarcerated veterans that will assist in lowering the recidivism rate for veterans. They would be part of the ODVA DOC team, and that team is part of the reentry and release program. And this is kind of what DOC and ODVA have looked at, is work in partnership with the Federal VA Veterans Justice Outreach Coordinator to assist with veterans case management for release and entry needs, directing these veterans to county veteran service officers for claims work and other services to help them successfully reintegrate back into society, develop close partnerships with other community partners like community corrections and parole and probation to extend that program into the community. And with the extra veteran service officers, it would allow us more inreach to the 14 different facilities located around the state, and it would be very beneficial for us. And I'd like to turn it over now to Cindy.
Chair Evans and members of
Welcome.
The committee, thank you. Good afternoon. And for the record, my name is Cindy Booth. I'm the Reentry and Release Administrator for the Oregon Department of Corrections. And Interim Director Sparks speaks highly of the collaboration between the Oregon Department of Corrections, the Federal VA, and the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs, and I want to echo that. I actually share nationally that this collaboration is one that should be replicated in other parts of our country. You have my written testimony before you, and I just want to briefly share and echo some of the comments from Interim Director Sparks. Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs partnered with us in the early spring of 2016 to actually repurpose part of a position that they have, a valuable position, so that that individual could travel at least twice a month to our intake facility in Wilsonville and meet directly with individuals coming through intake. And he has made substantial travel arrangements to meet with individuals in other parts of the state during this time as well. We believe that the task force report that the legislature received highlights the fact that veterans deserve the benefits that they've earned through service to their country. And the reentry benefits program that's outlined in Section 5 of the bill is going to strengthen the established collaborations we have to help Oregon better serve our incarcerated veterans, their families, and their dependents. And honestly, they're worthy of our attention and our care. So we're looking forward to working more closely together to build the collaboration statewide. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the panel? Sir?
Correct me if my memory serves me correct or it doesn't. Wasn't the Roseburg facility a match? Isn't there a local match in that?
Representative Esquivel, Chair Evans, I would have to get back to you on the exact facts and figures.
For the end project, there would have to be a match.
That's what I thought. And I also wanted to say that we did discuss this, I don't know, 6, 8 years ago, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And I also remember that we would like to see us expand that and go into the Klamath area, the Bend area, and the Pendleton area, or LeGrand area, because we need these facilities around the state.
Mm-hmm. Representative Lewis.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In some state statutes, a correctional facility includes county jails where somebody could be held for up to a year. Mm-hmm. In this bill, in Section 5, where it refers to correctional facility, is it intended to include county facilities?
Representative Lewis and Chair Evans, thank you for the question. Is that right now our first step into community or county corrections is to work with the local community corrections probation to mm-hmm. to grab the veterans who are being released from county corrections using the parole and probation and community corrections department to help them enter into those wraparound services that need, especially substance abuse treatment or mental health treatment with the federal VA. And that's our first step into that community corrections arena.
Okay.
There are a lot of county jails, and we're looking at it in a way that we can be effective with the amount of people that we have ID'd for the program.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I just want to follow up, mm-hmm. Mr. Chair. I just want to make sure that the definition in there was intended to include the county ones as well, and that there's not, there won't be some misconception later about whether it is or isn't. So, thank you.
One of the intentions was with the Incarcerated Veterans Task Force funding model was to first prove that the state system is doing everything it can, and then in partnership expand to the county okay. areas as appropriate. So it actually was intended to be as broad as possible, with the understanding that funding will drive the expense.
Thanks for that clarification.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Well, thank you both for coming. I will close the public hearing at this point. I see no other names listed. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, Acting Director Sparks, welcome aboard. And
thank you.
The intention is, if we can get the paperwork back, including the museum language,
which I just submitted.
Which you just submitted. Is to work it next week, because we want to make sure and not miss the train moving forward. So thank you very much for your testimony. We're now going to open up public hearing, House Bill 4098, and I'm going to ask Sione to read the bill, and then we will, while he's doing that, Representative Hurd, if you could come on up. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Chair, House Bill 4098 would provide veterans organizations with materials containing information regarding apprenticeship opportunities.
Okay, apprenticeship opportunities. Representative Hurd, welcome. Welcome to the nicest, friendliest committee
yes,
in the Oregon
absolutely.
Legislature.
Yes, respectable.
We're happy that you're here.
It's a strange feeling.
Please share with us who you are and where you come from, along with the fellow that you're inviting down.
The main man. I got to wait for the main man here. You want to go first?
Chair, what do you suggest?
It is up to the both of you.
Let me go first, because you'll probably steal all the good stuff. So I'm not nearly as brilliant as you. So.
No.
Representative Hurd, then.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Dallas Hurd, State Rep, House District 2, primarily Roseburg, but Douglas County, as well as parts of Jackson and Josephine County, and proud neighbor of Curry County. I am here to, and I want to say thank you to Rep. Meek for allowing me to be a co-chief sponsor on this bill. When I was made aware of it, I was just like, man, this is awesome. It's very much a continuation of some of the work we did last year in 2017, which was House Bill 3340. And I'm pleased to say that passed the House and the Senate last year in the 2017 session unanimously. And I would hope to think that this bill will see similar success.
So some background on 3340. What we did was we worked to try to push the effort of getting behind a coordinated information effort blitz on our junior high and high school students within the public school system here in Oregon, and really just saying, hey, look, public school system, this material is available out there. Let's make sure that our parents, guardians, students, everybody gets that this information in front of them at the career education, what would you call it, conventions and whatnot. Exactly. So that our students and their parents, for that matter, can be aware of the lucrative job opportunities that are out there in the skilled trades arena, especially. So moving on to House Bill 4098 that we're talking about today, I'm very much in support of it. That's why I wanted to be a co-chief sponsor. And it's very similar in the sense that it's really getting a coordinated, united effort behind getting this material created and put together so that our veterans can be better assisted in exposing them to, again, these lucrative job opportunities, which there's probably some folks, I think, that are signed up to testify to this bill today that will talk about how it's essentially no matter which road you choose in the skilled trades, when you're a GI Bill beneficiary, as our veterans are, you will receive a free education to become a licensed, you know, plumber, all sorts of different things. And there's benefits that will be spoke about today that are even better than that as far as really elevating the pay from day one once you become an apprentice. Some exciting stuff. So we all love our veterans, especially in this room. I'm the proud representative of a county that is, along with Curry County, Douglas and Curry County, if you're not aware of it, are certainly tied together for the highest saturation of veterans for total population in the state. I've been told by some national VA folks easily within the top 10 nationally as well. So we're roughly hitting around 20% of our total population is veterans in Douglas and Curry County. So because I'm selfish, I really just want to hit on the fact that I'm very biased for this bill, that I think it's going to have an incredible impact for rural Oregon. And I want to harken back to the governor's State of the State address yesterday. She spoke accurately so that we have many skilled job positions available in the state waiting to pay big bucks that nobody here in this state is ready to fill. And so I'm very impressed and very enthusiastic about the good representative's bill that he's brought before you, and I strongly encourage your support.
Thank you. Representative Meek.
Thank you, Chair Evans, Vice Chair Esquivel, Vice Chair Boone, and members of the committee. I'm very proud to introduce this bill, 4098, and I appreciate the good representative's support of this bill. We have a lot of good folks that are encouraged by this bill, and I thank the Oregon ODBA for their work and collaboration with me on trying to get this established, and also the building trades. As a veteran, when I got out of the Air Force, getting back into the workforce, didn't really know what I wanted to do, didn't even really know what opportunities were out there. So I fast forward to our veterans now that are coming straight out of high school, serving their country, trying to, you know, both help themselves and serve. It's a shame that we look at Oregon, and we are one of the top states for both homelessness for veterans and unemployment for veterans. And to me, that shouldn't equate with Oregon, and especially with the way our folks are serving voluntarily and going out and doing what they can. So I know that I spoke with a lot of folks in the building trades, and they say, we would hire a veteran tomorrow. We know that they're disciplined, they have really good work ethic, and we put them to work before. But now, how do we get the work and the information to the veterans? So I think this bill is digging a well. We're going to go right to the source of both the military department, to the veterans, to the Employment Bureau of Labor and Industries with their support, and get the information developed and get it distributed so that our veterans, at every angle they turn to try to figure out what the best opportunities are for them, that they will know that the trades and the apprenticeship programs that are out there are great opportunities, and that they should really consider them as part of, you know, their future. So very proud to present this, and I appreciate all your support, and I'm hoping that we can get this across the finish line this year. And we have some other folks going to testify more into the details, but I appreciate your consideration and your hopefully support of this bill.
Thank you. Any question for the representatives? Heretofore known as the representatives Herdmeek.
Herdmeek. Right. Yeah. No questions about where I shop or nothing?
No. No, but thank you for sharing that.
You want to know.
No, you're dying. Representative Esquivel is now awake. That's
Mr. Vice Chair, sorry.
Not at all.
All right. So thank you very much, both. We will now be working down the list. Boy, I don't know how to say his first name. Yes, that would be it. You, sir, are correct. Mr. Tribbett and Mr. Anderson, you're the first contestants on the round one experience. Please come on up, say who you are and what you do and where you're from for the record, please. And take as much time as you want as long as we're out of here by 4:15. So, keep going.
Outstanding. Chair Evans, members of the council, for the record, my name is Dale Dvorak. I work for the Pacific Northwest Regional Council of Carpenters. And I'm on here on behalf of the Carpenters to strongly support the House Bill 4098. First and foremost, I am a veteran of the United States Marine Corps. I'm also a third-generation military. My grandpa fought in World War II, got a couple Purple Hearts. My father was in the Marine Corps, and I served the Marine Corps to follow up. My father is also a carpenter, 38-year carpenter, tradesman, went through the apprenticeship program, and I followed in suit.
Well, thanks for your service.
Absolutely. Thank you, sir. You know, there's so many things that I want to follow up with you on because it's really unfortunate about the veterans and how we are the mass. So many veterans homeless out here and so many problems. You know, I came on the council and they appointed me the point position for the council for the veterans programs. And so I'm proud to throw out some figures for you for our apprenticeship program, but we had nothing like this in place, so I had to reach out there. There was nothing to push the veterans to us. I had to go out to outreach programs and go to all these things and go to, I was at a workforce this morning, right, for Easter SEALs, and talk to these people to bring it to us, right? And tomorrow we're having an event and trying to tie it all together. And so this bill is actually a perfect opportunity. It really works well. Right now we have 120 veterans within the Oregon apprenticeship program for the Carpenters. We have another 150 in Washington. Combined, we have about 300 veterans within the Carpenters apprenticeship program. We have thousands of veterans in our trade. Right, in the carpenters. That's not including the other trades, the electricians, IBEW, and all the different trades.
Operators,
engineers, all of them out there, right? I wasn't trying to tell you, right? So we always figure that if a veteran can serve his country, we give them an opportunity. We're looking for opportunities for them. I was fortunate. I came out and I found those opportunities. And you know, they sacrifice it. We want to show that sacrifice for them. So, it is my honor to speak on this. It impacts so many veterans that served for their lives for this country. This bill will give the veterans opportunities. It would give them a living wage, medical benefits, and not to mention a skill and a trade that'll benefit all of us. Throughout the state of Oregon, they're going to be building everything, right? We want to give them a trade. So thank you, and I am happy to answer any questions you may have through the chair.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
You, sir, next up.
Kind of new here.
It's all right. We don't bite much.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is James Anderson. I'm the business manager, financial secretary for the Operating Engineers Local 701. Plus, I am the chairman of the trust for our apprenticeship. We cover the whole state of Oregon and 5.5 counties in Southwest Washington. We, as operating engineers, we don't have as very many people like the electricians, the carpenters, and that. We run the cranes, we run the dozers, the heavy equipment. So where you might see a large job, we might only have 20. But we have to have the best and the skilled like they do too. Our training facility is in Canby. We have 65 acres of land where we have tower cranes, dozers, every piece of equipment you can think of. Not like the regular training programs that could work out of a building. We got 65 acres we got to play on. So, and you're welcome to come to Cambie at any time. This is near and dear to me. My father was a veteran World War II. He served under General Mark W. Clark. He was there for Italy and, sorry, I'm kind of having a brain dead right now. But anyways, but my son, I am not a veteran, but my son, he got the Commander Scholarship ROTC Air Force, Civil Engineering at University of Portland. He spent 6 years in the military. Once he got out of the military, he spent another 4 years in our apprenticeship. because he didn't want to be a civil engineer, he wanted to be a crane operator. So if you swing by Intel, you see that crane with 400 feet in it, that's my boy. But what's important is our soldiers, male or female. They're near and dear to us. We have, we did our survey through our retirees, apprentices, and active members. We have over 500 veterans. We have in our apprenticeship right now, we have 12 veterans. Our apprenticeship is smaller because with the equipment we have there. So as of right now, we have 56 apprentices in there. What we do have is we have two females that are veterans. We have three females that are minority. We have six male minority. We have a total of eight minority, five females, and 12 veterans. And then we have, I don't know politically how you say it, the guy, you know. But what happened was we were doing interview, apprenticeship interviews, and we had quite a few soldiers come through. We had 100 people, 100 applicants. We interviewed 40, and we could only take 20 a year. So what happened was I sat down with this one veteran and got to talking to him. And this is what really drew me in, was I asked him, you know, tell me about life. Why do you want to be an operating engineer? He says, I want the insurance, I want the retirement. He said, as a veteran, I have great insurance. He goes, but it's tough when I go, when I'm sick, to the VA, but my wife and my babies don't have the same insurance. And that's what we do. We supply the whole family with insurance. An apprentice starts, after 300 hours, they have health and welfare for their whole family. That's an 80-20 program. That's over and beyond their wage. An apprentice after, if the apprentice is older than 21 years old, it only takes 1,000 hours to get their pension going. If they are under, it takes 2,000 hours. An apprentice that runs a dozer or an excavator gets group four. They get 80% of wage, so they start off at $30 an hour. If they're running a roller or forklift, then they start off at $26. Our program is set up that the benefit package is negotiated that 60 cents an hour goes into training. So the journeyman pays into training to take care of the apprentice. The money does not come out of the apprentice's pocket. We want success, and we have having great success. We've been all over the state of Oregon, and we hit Medford, we hit Duffer, we hit the whole part of our jurisdiction. We're not just reaching out to the person in junior high, we're reaching to the senior. But we've got to reach out to the veterans. My father got out of World War II, went back to Youngstown, Ohio, and they didn't have jobs for him. 1.3 million of veterans were out of work. My dad was one of them. So he went and fought for his job. Well, nowadays, you know, it's you know, you either go to college or where the other four-year degree. I want them. I got to have jobs for them, but I want them. And I know I'm a little long-winded once I get wound up, but this is very passionate to me. We owe them.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Tribbett. Thank you. For the record, Ryan Tribbett here on behalf of a series of clients, the National Electrical Contractors Association, the Associated Wall and Ceiling Contractors, as well as the Building Trades Council and some of our affiliate members. I just wanted to explain just a little bit about when we were given the idea from Mr. Anderson here to go forward and try and do something to create a better partnership between our programs and going out and recruiting veterans. We went to Representative Meek, and he's been on board immediately, was enthusiastic about it, set up a meeting for us with the Department of Veterans Affairs, and that agency has just been wonderful to work with. They've been very enthusiastic, giving us even better ideas of how to improve what our initial concepts were that we went in with. Lori Skillman and Mitch Sparks have both been in those meetings and very helpful, and we look forward to this not just being one bill and feeling like it's over, but we're talking about this bill really being the start of a long-standing partnership between our programs and doing everything we can for veterans. Just to add a little bit more detail to something that was touched on in a couple of the previous testifiers is that in certain programs where the union programs are, where tuition is covered and already paid for as part of the program, the GI benefits can actually go towards closing the gap between the apprentice wage and the journeyman scale wage. And so when, like Representative Hurd was speaking, he mentioned this in passing, but that means when a veteran joins one of our programs, literally on day one, they're making just within a stone's throw of what they would make at the end of the program, on the first day of essentially their college education, making what they make at the after they receive the certification. So that makes it very exciting. It seems like with that type of scenario, when given, presented with that information, the veteran will make it an easy decision.
So any questions for the panel? Okay, I have one, but I don't need an answer today. So it's a request slash question. Not for this session because we are somewhat constrained in the time that we have. But Mr. Anderson, you mentioned that you can only take 20 a year. One of the things that the voters of Oregon meant when they passed Measure 96 was to provide money for pilot programs to make sure that if there are opportunities and gaps, that we have a little bit of money to be able to provide services for a specific period of time, especially for reentry. So one of the questions I have is, moving forward, if anybody here would be interested in, once the bill is passed, to ensure that information is being shared, specific key programs or training, apprenticeship training environments would seek expansion, there might be dollars to be able to try and help supplement that so that more GI Bill could be used. So, a thought moving forward, if that's of interest, put that in your head, because it would be interesting if we could actually leverage the GI Bill dollars to grow the apprenticeship capacity throughout the state so that even more workers that may be veterans, but some that may not be veterans, would benefit from a larger upscaled apprenticeship program. So, thank you very much, and have a wonderful day. I'm glad that you were here. We're going to call up the next two people on the list.
Thanks.
That'd be Mr. Darrell Fuller and Mr. Brian Krieg. And if there's anybody who was planning on testifying but did not get a chance to sign up, there's a third chair. You're welcome to come on up. If not, that's okay, too.
Go ahead.
And whichever one of you would like to speak first, batter up.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Darrell Fuller here on behalf of the Oregon Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors Association. First time I've testified before a hearing where it's appropriate to talk about your family history. So my dad's a veteran. My brother works for the National Guard. I've got a nephew who is a Marine. And I tried to join the Air Force. They said I wasn't good enough. So you can only do what you can do, right? We need, and I represent plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors, we need more skilled workers. I mean, we've got a lot of talk about that. The governor mentioned it in her State of the State address. We need more skilled people in the trades. Our association runs a steam fitter, pipe fitter apprenticeship program. We need more people in our apprenticeship program. We're constantly looking for opportunities to do outreach. And certainly outreach to veterans is an excellent opportunity. And there's been a bunch of discussion prior to my being here today about what apprenticeship programs can do for veterans. But I think that's only half the story. What those veterans can do for the apprenticeship programs and for the other people in those programs. So a lot of those apprenticeship programs have very young people in there that don't have much life experience. They're eager to learn. And I just think that if we could get more veterans into an apprenticeship program, that they will do more for the other kids there, perhaps, than they'll get out of it. But I would love to see more veterans into apprenticeship programs, not because of what we can do for them, but because of what they can do for the other kids in the program. Anyway, I think it's a great idea. Just wanted to lend our support, and I won't take any more time than that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Krieg.
Chair Evans, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian Krieg, representing the Plumbing Mechanical Contractors Association, the Sheet Metal Contractors Association, IBEW, and Sheet Metal Workers 16, and UA Plumbers 290. It's a large group of folks who are very excited about this measure. Last session, we were invited in by the Senate Veterans and Emergency Committee to talk about what our union training programs were actually doing in the way of trying to reach out and recruit veterans and the desirability of them. And you've heard a lot about that from everybody else. I won't go on about that much longer other than, yes, we really want to have more veterans come into the programs. It has been, and I'm going to use the words from one of my training directors. She sent me a text about this bill. She said, "This is exciting news. this particular bill you're hearing, because it has been clumsy and difficult for us to be able to reach out and find the veterans. And this really does help us by giving information to the veterans at a place where they're looking for information, instead of us just kind of randomly shotgun sending stuff out or going to so many events. There's already a website that was put together about apprenticeship programs that has literally all of them, I think, that was put together. I believe it was Boley was involved with it, and I believe it's housed now with HEC, that has a lot of information. That, just connecting the veterans' websites, the employment division's websites, with that information that's already there and has been created, and there's a lot of other materials out there. I know that all of our groups would be happy to help with any of the information that is needed to get more information out there. So thank you for bringing this bill forward and urge your vote.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yes, sir.
I don't really have a question. I just want to state that, you know, I've been a long supporter of the tech schools. And we made a mistake in education when we did away with our shop classes. We are back on track with some of those. Now we have a grant program that allows people to get those back. I think it was, and I'm pleased to see that we're including veterans and starting to put veterans to the front, because you can't ask for a better worker. But more importantly, I think Mike Schaffer summed it up well when he said, you can send all you want to college, get all the engineers you want, but who's going to build the bridge? And I think that's the key to this whole thing, because college isn't for everyone. In fact, less than 18% of all high school students that enter high school graduate out of college. So I think that's a pretty dramatic statistic. So that means 82% of the people we need to service in some way or another.
Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, and or even worse than that, they go to college and come back as lobbyists. So, you know, that's...
Well, we can't, you know, I mean, I don't know what to tell you there, Darryl.
Okay, on that note, I want to...
And I had a question for...
Do you have a question?
Mr. Fuller, but I'm going to go ahead and let it pass.
All right.
So, he already basically answered what I was going to ask.
I appreciate your grace.
In lieu of that, I'd like to publicly, while we're still in public hearing, publicly thank Acting Director Sparks, Lori Skillman, all the folks at ODVA, Ryan, the trades, folks who testified here, and the folks that were involved that didn't yet testify. One of the hidden realities of the modern military that not everybody who's not familiar with the military understands is that since the 1990s, the military, as a matter of policy, has tried and succeeded in large part to diminish the non-combatant functions in the military, meaning that in the 1950s, 1960s, 1970s, if you joined the military, whether by draft or choice, it was very likely you might get a job that had an applicable job on the outside, driving truck, cook, other types of HVAC, other types of things. Because of budgets, because of overseas contingency operations, we've gone since Vietnam from 1 to 10 as far as the tooth-to-tail ratio to 1 to 3, contracting out all those other services, which means that when people get out of the military, they're really trained to kill people. So that does have some applicability in some trades. However, we don't have as many ready-to-work, trained truck drivers, engineers, mechanics, et cetera. So these apprenticeship programs, I think, are on the right track. I would encourage the members of the committee, as we, again, recognize the scale and scope of a brief session, but look forward to the 2019 session. ODVA, hint, hint, there might be something coming. A grant program that would be similar to some of the other grant programs we put out there as pilots to see what type of apprenticeship expansions could happen would be worthy of consideration. So for future bill concepts, that may be there. So I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4098. I want to explain that in the very starkest terms, I plan on working this Tuesday next. We should have the paperwork at that point. I want to remind folks that when we work 4098 on Tuesday, it does not require a subsequent Ways and Means, so it'll be going to the floor. So it'll be one of the first ones in the queue, so just a heads up on that. And having no other business before us, seeing nobody else jumping up and down saying they need to say something, we are going to close today's House and Veterans Emergency